and welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and I'm so excited that you're joining us today. We are going to have a fascinating conversation, as usual, as we learn from people all around the world at all ages and stages of life. Stay tuned as we shift our dementia care from crisis to comfort.
Here we go. What you think about?
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks. I'm thrilled you're back with us. We are going to have a really interesting conversation about how speech therapy can really benefit those with dementia. And I can't wait to introduce you to our guests. But first, I'm going to do a couple of shout outs. One is just to remind people that on November 10th, I'll be down in Texas in Amarillo for the 17th annual Caregiver Conference by the Area Agency of Aging. And you can register for that at 806-331-2227. And I would love to be able to see you there. Also, if you're looking for a support group, I do a virtual group on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month. Just email me at radio@alzheimerspeaks.com and we can get you that information. That is sponsored by Arthur Senior Care. And what else? Please check out Alzheimer's Speaks free educational resources. We have a ton of them there. You'll also find our book tab with Betty the Bald Chicken. And you'll also want to check out Dementia Map, which is our global resource directory that has over 150 different categories to search. There's wonderful articles and events you can find there as well. So let's go ahead and introduce you to our guest today. Well, Avipit, I am so excited to have you on the show. A really important topic that we're going to be talking about, speech therapy and how it can benefit people with dementia. So I'm going to have you, if you don't mind, introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Avipit Ben-Aharon, and I am a speech language pathologist. I've been a speech therapist for about 20 years now, which sounds really long. And I am the founder and clinical director of Great Speech Inc., which is a virtual speech therapy company.
Wonderful. Thank you. Now, I always ask every single one of my guests if they've been personally touched by dementia in their own family or circle of friends. So if you wouldn't mind sharing that
Absolutely.
With us.
Yes, absolutely. So a few years back, my husband's mother, my mother-in-law, was diagnosed with dementia, and it's been really such an eye-opening experience for us, having to see the struggles that she's going through and the limited availability of therapeutic intervention that is being offered to her. And I'm just always amazed to see like what it really takes a village to help somebody who is diagnosed with such a condition to really ensure that they maintain a quality of life and are really helped through therapy.
So I want to have you share with us exactly what Great Speech is and why did you start it?
So Great Speech is a virtual speech therapy provider network, and we provide speech therapy services for members all across the U.S. We're licensed right now in 47 states, and we provide services to both kids and adults. Oftentimes people perceive speech therapy as something for mostly for kids, but speech therapy really can support so many different clients at so many different ages. We work a lot with adults who have been diagnosed with dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, traumatic brain injury, various cancers. And we really see the benefits of supporting and improving quality of life and connections with therapy. What's unique about us is that we really did start way before COVID. So our model has been since 2014. It's always been a virtual model. And it was specifically designed in mind to try to maintain an easier approach for families and caregivers to therapy. So not having to take somebody to a clinic or not having to find a local clinic made a huge difference in patients' participation and attendance in therapy. The convenience factor made a huge difference for clients being able to maintain a consistent schedule. And with that, we're seeing really significant results.
Oh, that's fantastic. That time and going out in public, people don't understand how much it takes sometimes, especially if you're dealing with someone who, like you said, might have a traumatic brain injury or dementia, depending on where someone is in the process. If they're understanding, I know my mom used to get, and she lived with dementia for 30 years. She used to get really anxious going to the doctor, like, what's wrong with me? And then she would just spin and spin and spin on that. And
Absolutely.
so,
And we see that both with pediatric patients and with the adult patients. So like you mentioned about your mom, it would be very anxious for them to get ready, to get dressed, to have to leave the house, familiar setting, who is going to be in the waiting room? Are they going to talk to me? Are they going to ask me a question? It just created so much extra stress that was really not necessary. And we find that to be true even with our pediatric patients. They're so much calmer not having to rush out of the house in order to get to a clinic on time. And then mom has to find a parking spot. And I had a really sweet boy a couple of months back who said to us, like, thank you. Now my mom doesn't have to yell at me because I'm making her run late to therapy. And she gets so annoyed when we are late. Every family has its own dynamics, but nowadays when people are so busy and accessibility is really such an easy thing. It's easy to leverage this technology to really support the clients where they are. And I think it makes a huge difference in their participation in therapy.
Oh yeah. Well, and like with my mom, with any doctor appointment, we used to be able to tell her a couple weeks in advance, then it was a week, then it was 2 days, then it was like, no, we're just gonna have to take her out and slide her out and go. So this is just so simple,
Absolutely.
to have it
Absolutely.
in your house. And when you were talking about going to the doctor, I had a flashback when I was a kid. This is hilarious, but my dad used to take us to the dentist all the time. And my mom, because sometimes appointments, different people have to take you. And so my mom took us to the dentist. She parked in the parking ramp and we went to leave. And all three of us kids were like, no, you go down this way, you go down this way. Here, my mom is driving down the up ramp because my dad used to park at a different level.
That's so
And
funny.
she said, I'm never taking them again. I mean,
That's
she's
funny.
sweating, and she had gotten down probably three rounds, and then she had to back up.
Of
Oh, she was
course,
ready to kill
yes.
us. But yeah, all those goofy little stressors that you don't anticipate can come into play.
Absolutely. They're stressors, and then it's also the inability to find therapists that specialize in the kind of care that you need specifically for yourself or for a loved one. So not every clinician is comfortable with working with the adult population or in a rehab type of support. And it's really essential to find a therapist who can be of value and improve your skill set. So if the therapist is not familiar with your specific condition or your specific symptoms, then it makes it so much harder for them to really improve and help you get to the goals that you want to try to achieve. So I think that's what ends up happening is that a lot of people just don't have access to the kind of care that would really help improve their deficits and their challenges.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're right. It's hard to find somebody now and then to get into an appointment. And again,
Absolutely.
this eases the burden. Now, your therapist, I think you had mentioned you're in 47 different states. So
Yes, yes.
are therapists specific to a state, or do some have are they licensed in more than one state?
Yes, all of our team members have multiple licenses, so it allows us to leverage their skill sets in different states. And some states, obviously, we have multiple therapists that can support that state. But it really allows us to be able to provide the kind of care and the kind of therapy that's not dependent on geographical limitations. And we really leverage time zones, and we leverage times. So it's interesting to see that as time progresses and people are more comfortable with this virtual model, we are now seeing younger kids that are 5 and 6, and we start seeing them at 6 or 7 o'clock at night, which you would think ordinarily is like too late already to start therapy. But these kids already had their dinner, they're already showered, they're wearing their PJs. And they do the therapy, and then after that they go to bed. And it's like it's a shift. It's like a mind shift of wow, such a little kid doing therapy so late. But for a lot of families, by the time parents come home from work and get themselves settled and finish homework and all that, they need the later hours that allows them to be able to work and do this kind of therapy. And then this way they're doing it in an area where mom and dad are within an earshot of the therapy. And with the older patients, what we're seeing is that a lot of times the caregivers, whether it's their kids or a loved one or whomever, can log in remotely to the sessions as well. So it's not uncommon for us to have a, you know, a child who lives in, we had recently somebody who's in California and the parent lives in, I think it was Florida, and the child logged into the session remotely and participated in the session with their parent. And it was really so touching to see everybody being together and the child's kind of sharing some valuable information about their parent. And it was just all around, it was a very, very meaningful session.
Well, you know, the other thing I was thinking about with those evening hours right before bed, you know, unconsciously they're thinking about that when they're sleeping, which I would think would, you know, be an added benefit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. And people are just like more at that time of the day already are more relaxed. They're not trying to rush and fit in more things. And I think it just changes the whole perception of what therapy is and how, you know, accessible it is and how it could just blend into your day and not be something that is really challenging and you really need to maneuver the entire schedule around to make it fit.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-494-8310. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-494-8310. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now, 800-494-8310.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Wonderful. Well, let's talk about like Alzheimer's disease and dementia, how people can benefit who have a form of dementia, or do you work just with people with Alzheimer's? I should probably clarify that.
We absolutely work with both, but again, in more of the earlier stages, the stages where we feel like we can still somewhat slow down the progression or teach skills that would be beneficial in maintaining connection, in maintaining communication skills. And it's interesting to see because oftentimes, and I've seen it with my own mother-in-law and the process that so much of it is dependent on pharmaceutical intervention and so little of it is dependent on therapy intervention. But there's so many things that we could do ahead of an official diagnosis. Sometimes when people just start to feel like something is a little off and there are some concerns, that's a good time to seek out some support to see if there's something more there. Is it just that the patient is getting older? Are they typical signs of just typical aging, or is it something more, it warrants a little more intervention?
Okay, wonderful. Can you give us some examples of maybe things that people with dementia struggle with speech-wise? Because I know there's all different types of angles that you guys, you know, work with and strategize with people.
Absolutely. So yeah, I mean, mostly it's communication that we're looking for. Maintaining conversation, retrieving words, being able to recall information, being able to organize yourself. You know, sometimes it's as simple as working on skills that are related to life, to just activities of daily living. Even something as simple as, you know, how to balance a checkbook or how to look at the calendar or how to maintain a calendar or things like that, depending on the stage where the client requires intervention will determine what kind of skills are we looking for. And we can do anything from, you know, sometimes we'll just look at the newspaper articles and analyze some articles and talk about some concepts in the article. So depending on where the client is, we'll determine how far we can go with our intervention. And again, the more mild cases or the earlier cases are definitely easier in some ways to address, because we can really then set the tone and begin the process at an earlier stage than somebody who's already been diagnosed years back and it's already showing more challenges when it comes to communication.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, if you have just tuned in, you're probably going to want to reel back and listen from the beginning. We have been talking with Avivit Beat, and she is the founder and clinical director of Great Speech Inc., which is a virtual speech therapy company, which was founded back in 2014. So they were way ahead of COVID and all this telehealth stuff that we're seeing now. She has been recognized as a trailblazer nationwide for her virtual access for speech therapy and allowing anyone who is committed to improving their communications to receive expert service, which is really, really admirable. They're in 47 different states, which is fantastic. And they've got, you know, flexible schedules and stuff, which is very interesting as well. And so we're going to be talking next about, we've touched a little bit on, you know, Alzheimer's disease and dementia, but we're going to continue that conversation here as well. But you can always go and find her on LinkedIn. You can go to their website, Great Speech. They also have a Great Speech on LinkedIn as well, and they are on Twitter. So let's talk a little bit again about speech therapy and individuals with Alzheimer's disease and how about other types of dementias like Lewy body and vascular and FTD. Do you see distinct differences in terms of needs?
Not necessarily distinct differences. It really depends on to what stage of the diagnosis are we called in for. Mm-hmm. And again, I think what's interesting now is that we're seeing more and more patients that are younger and younger. Where I think when I was initially starting in this field some 20 years ago, it was a lot more common to see this with the older population. Now we're seeing symptoms and people who have concerns at a much younger age. It could be as simple as just people are more aware, and people are more in touch with, you know, what they feel is within the normal range for them and what's different than what they're expecting. And they know to seek out help a little bit earlier. Maybe physicians are more on top of things. Maybe family history is more prevalent with certain types of dementia and Alzheimer's. So I think there's like a very wide range. But what's interesting to note is that we're definitely seeing diagnoses now much younger. And it impacts life in a different way, I think. And again, in some ways, the younger generation of patients are much more comfortable working with this virtual model. So it, in some ways, it really does work.
Okay. So when you say younger, what are you talking?
In 50s, 40s, 50s, which again, I would have expected it to be, well, it used to be much more of an older diagnosis. So you're certainly seeing it at a younger age. And we're seeing a lot of different kind of ailments today that we didn't see in the past at younger ages. So you see a lot more stroke victims. You're seeing a lot more traumatic brain injury, cancers, people with feeding and swallowing issues and things like that that are typically were thought of for the older, like, you know, patients in their 70s and 80s and 90s. Yes, you would expect it. But when you're starting to see people, I mean, we've had multiple stroke victims that are in their early 30s. And that's definitely newer. And I definitely don't think that was, you know, back in, you know, 20 years ago, that was so common.
What about people with aphasia when they have the jarbled words?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's as a byproduct of stroke or traumatic brain injury. Or absolutely. You're definitely seeing more of that. You're seeing people who have a harder time coordinating their musculature in their mouth and their tongue. So people who sound like they're having a harder time communicating and expressing themselves, Bell's palsy, people who've had some sort of, you know, paresis or some sort of a, paralysis of muscles or coordination of muscles or poor coordination of muscles, people who tend to drool. I mean, again, these are things that are much more common now for us to see in our practice. And again, much more common for us to see at a younger age. And I think part of it is that just people are very aware and they know to, you know, to seek out help. And part of it is just, I think, our lifestyles and the stress that a lot of us are under, a lot more anxiety, things like that, that probably are contributing to the influx of these other communication ailments.
So for this, is this a private pay or can they get referred through their doctors? How does that work?
Great question. So one of the differences that I really think COVID improved in so many ways is because of the fact that during COVID, we've had much more accessibility to telehealth in general and specifically to these specific areas of interventions such as speech therapy, occupational therapy, and physical therapy. Insurance companies are much better now about reimbursing. We are definitely within network within many, many companies now, and they're listed on our website. So we are covered by insurance, by a lot of the insurance plans that are available today commercially, and Medicare. And if not, then it can be paid through private pay or HSA, FSA funds and things like that. So we take those funds as well.
Okay. And, you know, a couple of things that I wanted to ask you was in terms of benefits for the patient, what do you see in terms of their confidence level and just kind of the whole dignity piece for them?
So I think it's a confidence level, definitely a booster where they feel more comfortable being able to communicate or at least know what to do if they get stuck on a word. We see it a lot with patients who struggle with getting the words out or they can't think of a word or they're having a hard time retrieving the right word. So during the therapy sessions, we work a lot on skills that help to improve those. And I think having something at your disposal to be able to use as a tool, I think it's super helpful for a lot of patients, especially in a social situation. So the byproduct of that is that you are more social and less likely to go into isolation and experience depression or experience feeling of negative self image because of the way you're communicating. So I think in so many ways, seeking this kind of help really ensures that less likely that you will feel the isolation that is often associated with any kind of communication need. And I think one of the beautiful things that we're seeing today is that people are much more open to, they're much less judgmental or much less judgy when it comes to somebody with a communication need. I feel like people are much more open today to having those kind of conversations and say, oh, okay, I understand. So you're a stutterer or you have dementia or you have Alzheimer's. These are conversations that I think people are more comfortable today having and setting expectations, which I think is very good. But I think the key thing is to ensure that the social connections are not terminated because of the diagnosis. And I think if that's something that we can support and ensure that people are still maintaining a very active lifestyle and a lifestyle where they feel comfortable socializing and interacting, whether it's with family or with friends, I think that's super important. And that's why I love the session when we have caregivers or we have children or we have whomever logging into the session. Sometimes it's even as simple as a friend, a good friend, and it just creates a very natural conversation. And I think it's really important to have that.
Yeah. Well, because we can all learn. And I'm a big believer in social engagement and building that tribe that you're comfortable with.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
An understanding. Now, with the care partners, what do you think it does for them to have their person going to speech therapy?
Again, fantastic question, because I think what it is first of all, it allows them to feel like they're doing something. They're supporting the intervention journey, which I think is so important. Everybody wants to feel like they're contributing in some way. So knowing that there's something that they're doing that can be helpful, I think is super, super, it's super positive and super reinforcing. And, you know, getting some tools, sometimes it's about how do I communicate with my mom now that her ability to understand me has diminished. So how should I be speaking with her? So just having these conversations with the therapist to get some suggestions and ideas of what's the best way to communicate, what's the best way to improve quality of life, maintain skills. We oftentimes remind our patients the value of looking at pictures and albums and retrieving some of that information from the past and who's this person and tell me about this person. And getting to know your family member on a different level, I think is super important. And it during therapy, we remind our patients and their caregivers of these kind of things that they can do together, whether it's reading an article together or just maintaining the brain's activity. I think is super important. Maintaining skills is super important. And it gives caregivers a lot of ideas and suggestions as to what they could do on their own to ensure that they're supporting their loved ones. Because ultimately that's what anybody wants. They want to know that there's something that they could do to facilitate communication, to improve communication, to ensure that the client doesn't feel isolated or doesn't feel alone. And I think it's really important.
Yeah. Well, just to have that understanding of the whys behind what's happening. Mm-hmm. I think so often care partners, and it happens unconsciously, but they feel like their loved one is like pushing their buttons, you know, and it's like, no, this isn't something that they can control typically. And, if they could wish, this wouldn't be the issue that they were dealing with and stuff. And, you know, when care partners are tired and exhausted, a lot of times we can snap and not be the most gracious and stuff. So any tools that can support us on that, I think are really, really helpful there.
Absolutely. And if I could just add, I think also what happens is by having these kind of open conversations, we're reminding a lot of our caregivers that the person who is in front of them today is struggling and it's not the same person that they're necessarily used to. And the behaviors, especially the behaviors, when the behaviors become more prominent, it's much harder to remember that how could it be that my mom is speaking to me this way? And we've had clients say that to us, like, I don't understand, how could she possibly be this mean or say these mean things? But then you have to sort of bring it back to this is a person who's struggling right now. This is a person who is going through something, and this is not the same person necessarily that you expect, and the expectations need to be accordingly.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things, you use the term behavior, which most of us do, but I think about, you know, someone who is struggling, how often they're told it's a behavior, you know, and that is not a compliment. And they know that. And so that just kind of adds to their frustration. So I think we have to really kind of put on that investigative hat about the whys and really look at those reactions truly as reactions, as clues, as signals that something is off. And it might be something that is fixable or controllable, and it might be something that's not, you know, like, you know, it could be that the brain has just degenerated in that area and the personality has changed. Like if they've got frontal temporal lobe, you know, something on that order, but it might just be out of frustration. They might be in pain. They might be, you know, they might be hungry because they can't swallow, or they might be thirsty and their throat's dry. All of those little things can really add up. And then, you know, when we're not feeling good, then we usually don't sleep as good. You know, I mean, so there's just layer after layer after layer.
Yeah. It's a vicious cycle. And then you take medications, and then the medications have side effects, and then you take medications for the side effects, and then have other side effects. And it becomes this never ending cycle. And it's a hard place to be, both for the patient and for the caregiver. There's no doubt. I'm a firm believer, wherever is possible, to join support groups, see who's available in the community, what support the caregivers need and what support the patient needs. And especially for the caregivers, it's just like that analogy in the, you know, on the plane. First, you got to put the oxygen mask on yourself and then take care of the person next to you. And it's really that important that you first and foremost make sure that you are in a position that you feel supported and that you have the strength and the ability to support your loved one.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever thought of, or maybe you're already doing, support groups within your group, just so that people have that chance to be able to test themselves out with others that are struggling with kind of the same thing?
So we have attempted to set up a few support groups, especially during COVID, but it logistically becomes much more challenging. Different time zones, different clinicians, insurances are not always working when it comes to, you know, that type of group activity. But there typically are ones in the library, in the local library or the local, you know, school nearby. And I find that those groups are more accessible even. And there are virtual groups as well that are available. So there are definitely resources and there are definitely supports that are available for both the patients and the caregivers. And I think just people sometimes have to think outside the box. For example, we had a client who reached out and also was post-stroke. So very hard to understand his ability to speak. It was really a struggle. And it happens to be that the office manager picked up the call and was speaking with him. And she understood from him that he was having a hard time figuring out how to do this virtual setup. So she was thinking outside the box and she reached out to his local library, the public library in his neighborhood. She figured out based on where he lives. She Googled where the library is. She reached out to the library and set him up with a session, a weekly session with the therapist in his local library. He could get there himself. And there is a laptop waiting for him and headphones waiting for him every time he has a session scheduled. And it was just a way to use the resources in the community to really support him and ensure that he gets the therapy that he needs. And that was, I find this to be like the best way to use resources and being able to really reach as many people as we can.
Oh, that's great. I didn't even think about hooking up with the libraries because they all have that accessibility.
They all have it. Yes. And they have a lot of resources available, especially for patients that are older. And sometimes it's just a matter of getting them to the library. But once they're in the library, there are librarians there who can set them up and get them situated with the computer. And it's less intimidating. And the connectivity situation tends to be better. And if there is an issue, that there is people there to reach out to, because sometimes that's what it is. The patients are just too nervous by the fact that it's online. And how do I log in and how do I get in touch with the therapist? And just seems a little daunting for them. So having that set up in the library was fantastic. And it becomes almost like a social. And now this patient has like a plan every Tuesday and Thursday. He knows he needs to get to the library and then he hangs out there with the librarians and they chit chat and it becomes like a social outlet for him. And I think it's just awesome.
Oh, sweet. And you feel part of the community then.
Yeah. Yeah. And you remind people that there are resources, which I think is incredible. I mean, I could see just in the library here around here that they have chair yoga and they have conversational support groups and things that are not necessarily therapeutic per se, but they are so beneficial to maintain skills.
Yeah. Well, and I guess I would argue that they are therapeutic from a social level. And
correct. Absolutely.
And I think we need more of them because I think
100%.
I think the power of them is really undervalued in our mm-hmm. healthcare system. And I just personally, I think it's kind of shameful because it makes such a difference when somebody feels part of their community, mm-hmm. you know, so.
They feel part of, they feel positive, they feel engaged in a meaningful way. They feel like they have a purpose. Now they have, it's a set schedule. Now we're going to get up in the morning. We have a plan. We're going to get ready. We're going to get dressed. Like there's a plan. There's a purpose. So even for the ones who are more homebound, it's good for them to have a plan, mm-hmm. Where they know that the therapist is coming and, you know, and doing the session virtually and getting set up and all that. And it's something to look forward to. And I think for a lot of our patients, that's huge. And yes, again, just reminding that their families, that there are a lot of resources in the community. And a lot of times a therapist will go that extra mile and really try to help the families figure out what resources are available within their community.
Yep. Wonderful. Well, this has been a great conversation. Is there anything that we haven't covered yet?
No, I really think that, you know, as more research comes out to the benefit of therapy and intervention, and again, it coupled with the pharmaceutical interventions, I think it's really so important to have both, not just forget about these skills. There's so much benefit, so much evidence of the benefit of therapy to improve the quality of life, reduce isolation, and really ensure that patients have a longer sense of belonging and connection with family and their community. And I think that's so important. And I really hope more and more people will look into adding therapy into their intervention plan.
Yeah, I would really like to, and I've been pushing researchers on this to add this into their trials. And they're like, well, we really can't, you know, we have to have the placebo and then we have to have the drug. And I'm like, but you could have a third, because when you're getting that social support, I believe, and I'm not a medical person or a researcher, it changes your whole metabolic system.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely,
which could affect then the medication. And I think they're missing a huge area that could be really beneficial. But
absolutely. And I really do agree with you. I think that is a movement that we really need to move towards. Yes, there's a lot of benefits to pharmaceuticals. I will be the first one to say, but there's also definite research and studies that show the support of doing the intervention as well. And really ensuring that mentally and emotionally, the clients feel that their needs are being met. And it's not just, okay, I took a pill and now what? I took a pill, but I went outside and I went to the library and I did chair yoga and I did these exercises and I spoke to people and I socialized. And I think that that's when you really see the benefits.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, in wrapping up, we have been talking with Avivit, and she is with Great Speech, and which is a virtual speech therapy group that is really, you know, changing how therapies are being delivered and changing people's lives in a dramatic way. So I really encourage people to be a giver of hope and like, click, and share and follow her. You know, it's important that we get this information out to people. You've got people in your sphere that, you know, are probably dealing with things that they haven't told you. And the more we can push this information out and make it, you know, friendly, accessible, the more lives we're going to be able to change, the more information we're going to be able to hear in order to be able to devise products, services, and tools to meet those needs as well. So please join us in being a giver of hope. Again, you can go to their website directly, which is greatspeech.com. They are on LinkedIn and Twitter as well, but check them out. So again, in wrapping up, don't forget to check out alzheimerspeaks.com for all of our free educational resources and more. You might also be interested in our book, Betty the Bald Chicken, which it talks about how we feel when we don't feel like we fit in or belong. It's written as a children's book, but all ages are using this for therapy. It's just a great way to have a conversation on how we care. We'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
It's time to rethink, renew, and reimagine retirement. Hey everybody, Jared Sylvester here, host of Retire Repurposed. Now, this podcast is about the non-financial parts of retirement, which many times can be even more challenging than the financial. We believe retirement is not the end, rather the beginning of what could be the most impactful, purposeful, and fulfilling season of a person's life. So don't retire, become repurposed. To listen now, search Retire Repurposed on your favorite podcast platform, Senior Resource, or Life Audio.